Roy Shen, sorry. Whatever.
Gentlemen, today's topic is based on the Gemara and the Sechta Brochas of Chav Dalet Amud Aleph. The Gemara tells us initially that there's a concept of Tefach B'Yisha Erva, Shok B'Yisha Erva, and then the Gemara concludes by telling us that there is Kol B'Yisha Erva and Seir B'Yisha Erva. So four in a row. Bang, 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 bang. And we're here to discuss primarily the second group. A little bit of background is necessary. The Gemara asks a question on the very initial statement. This takuleba? Are we saying there's a prohibition against staring at and gazing upon this? Gemara says that's even less than a tefach. Gemara says, Be'ishto l'kriyashma. What does it mean, Lishto l'kriyashma? Im tefach magula ba, says Rashi, Yikwa kriyashma kenegda. So the Gemara tells us that there's less than a tefach expose the man of his wife. The man may say Shema, if it's a tefach amor, not. This is the opening line. Shok, what is shok? Again, says Rashi, Lishtakel, V'chein b'ishto l'kriyashma. Once again, so according to Rashi, the first two are referring to Kriyashma. And then the last two actually says nothing. But one might think it's also talking about Kriyashma. That Kol B'Yisha Erva was a problem during Kriyashma. And Seir B'Yisha Erva is also a problem during Kriyashma. So one might say. If one looks, however, in the in Evan HaEzer, which is a Shulchan Aruch about restrictions between a man and a woman, one sees that these restrictions do not apply only to the time of Kriyat Shema; they apply all the time. That a man is not supposed to be listening to the voice of a woman, nor is a man supposed to be looking at the woman, as we said before, in a staring fashion. Okay, so this is just an introduction based on the Talmudic excerpt here in Masechta Brachos on Daf Chav Dalet Amud Aleph. Let's look it up, it's towards the bottom. We'll give you some general background. Now let's discuss Kol B'Yisha Erva. That's a more easy topic to talk about. I want to explain to you that the issue we just mentioned of whether Kol B'Yisha Erva is Kriyashma related or not is a matter of dispute. Let me go take a step back. It says in the Shulchan Aruch, as I said before, in Evan HaEzer, that nothing to do with Shema. It's quoting from the Rambam, that a man should not be listening to the voice of a woman. So it says. No explanation is given. It's remarkable that the issue of whether it has particular relevance to Shema is a matter of dispute. Because after all, the Gemara says Le'ishto L'Kriyashma only with respect, explicitly with respect to Tefach B'Yisha Erva, not Shok, not Kol, and not Seir. It just doesn't say it. So Rashi said it with respect to Shok, at least partially. With respect to the others, Rashi is silent. So I'm just going to go through what we have in front of us and analyze it based upon what the Rishonim said. So the first citation is from the Rosh in the back of Masechta Brachos, the third perek, Simen Lamed Zayin. He quotes the Gemara Ishto L'Kriyashma. Kol B'Yisha Erva, he says. Pirish l'shmoa, v'lo l'inyan kriyashma. Bingo. Kol B'Yisha Erva to listen to it, and it's nothing to do with kriyashma. V'lo l'inyan kriyashma. So says the Rosh. Okay, it's a pretty straightforward comment, and not too very unambiguous. So what does that mean? So, we'll see soon. Say Abisha Erva. So the rush ends. Benoshim shedak on the chasel sa'ara. Women who usually cover their hair. Ava besulos, single women. Shedak on the head of pruos, who go with the hair uncovered. Mutalikos connecta. No problem. So once again, it's clearly understanding that Seir has to do with Krishna. What do you mean liquids connecta? So the exception to the rule, according to the Rosh, is Kol. You get the impression that that Tever is Shema, and Shog presumably is Shema, and Seir is Shema. Kol is under Shema. Separate and independent prohibition. And we're going to be so far. We're scattering information. Yes?
Did you give us the source? Like,
Rosh is Perek Gimel Simen Lamed Zayin.
No, the Torah source. Is there a
Torah? Oh, the Torah. That's very important. Excellent. In each of these things, the Gemara quotes a source. When it comes to Kol, it says Ki Kol Eich Orev Umarech Nove, a pasuk in Shir Hashirim. With me? When it comes to Seir, Sarech Keeder Ha'izim, another pasuk in Shir Hashirim. Okay? So you asked a good question, I gave you the answer that Gemara has. Okay? Now finally, there is, I'm not going to spend too much time reading the source, we could be here all day, but just the Mordechai in the back of Masechta Brachos also talks about it. It's an important source. Here we go. The Mordechai is in Simon Pei. So, Tefach B'Yisharva means Tefach Shadakol His Kasos. Doesn't mean your forehead, her forehead. Doesn't mean her knuckles. Part of her body that's normally covered. And so to show Kol, etc. Pirush Avhai Gom. The call Hani Le'inyan Kriyashma. It's all going on Kriyashma. It's a fight between Rav Haigon and the Rosh. The Rosh said call has nothing to do with Kriyashma, and Rav Haigon said it has to do with Kriyashma. The cause of Rav Lezim Mimitz B'Sefi Yireim. G'ch'osa Loma Davashi B'Gdusha B'Shmiyas Kol Shirish Alisha. When a woman is singing, not when she's speaking, when she's singing, you may not recite Shema. Because it's Shema related, as Rav Haigon said, in contrast to the Rosh. And the non-Jewish women are always singing. You have to break the rules. Hilkach. How do you like that? So this is the... What the Mordechai says. Fascinating. Then he quotes the Rav Yah that Erevas Dafka Bedavash and Regilus Ligalus. It's normally not exposed, as we said before. Ava Basula Regila Begilusa. She's normally exposed as her hair. She's single. Lo Chashin, it's no problem. The Lekahiru. There's no evil thoughts. It's just a normal thing to see the single woman with the hair uncovered. End quote. So I gave you the Gemara, a little of the Rush, a little of the Mordechai. All right, everyone, you got the facts? Just gathering facts so far. Any questions? If you have any questions, ask it right now. Yes, don't be ashamed. So now I'll open the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, with this back, I'll open the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is in Siman Ayin Hey in Hilchos Kriyashma. He says, Tefach Magula B'Isha is Mabokos Shadak al Chasosa, which is normally covered. I feel the Yishto, it's his own wife. Also, Likwes Kriyashma Kenegna. Okay. That's very nice. Tell me, Is there anything which is objective, or is everything subjective? Makom shadaka lechasoso sounds very, very subjective. But if it's if it didn't normally go that way, it should be no problem. Can I ask you a serious question? Do you think it's permissible to read Kriya Shema in a nudist gown? On the grounds that there's nothing that's makom shadaka lechasoso. They don't cover it? I'm just asking your opinion. What do you think? No. Think well. The question is, so what is objective and what is subjective? So one could have said, okay, the Mokom Erev Mamish, the genitals are objective, and everything else is subjective. One could have said that. The Mishnah Berurah says differently. The Mishnah Berurah says, what's permissible? Poneha Yodeha, her face, her hands, kifi aminik shederach lios megula b'osavokim, as it's normally exposed in that place. V'chein parsos regal ad ashok, and also her feet until the shok. We know shok will be sheriff, we saw. Where's the borderline? Where's the cutoff point? Says the Mishnah Berurah. V'ad amokom shenikre kini kuf nun yud aleph v'loshen Ashkenaz. Who wants to spell kuf nun yud aleph in English? Come on, four letters. K-N-E-E, right? Kni. So that's where it comes from, right? So this is the Mishnah Berurah. So the Mokom Shadaka Leilach Yachef, if the women go and expose until the knee, it's Mutta Likus Kinegdo. Shekev and Sharaga by an Enabona Dehiru. With a Mokom Shadaka Lechasos, Shiru and Tefach. And he concludes with a final resounding shout heard around the world. But her arms and her thigh, even if all the women go that way, they all wearing sleeveless, they all wearing miniskirts. Asur. So that's the Mishnah Berurah. It's asur. A woman may not go that way, nor may she might be recited if the woman is exposed in her upper arm or her thigh, even if all the women in town go that way. There's a psak of the Mishnah Berurah, loud and clear. Does everyone agree? Now.
It's there.
It's there. Does everyone agree with the Mishnah Berurah? I mean, the Mishnah Berurah is a great man, but not everyone necessarily agrees with him. So you have to quote a source for this. You just make things up. So he quotes three sources. In the bottom is a Sharatian, three sources. Number one, Eli Rabba, name of the Rokeach. Not so clear. Ayin Shah. Number two, the Chayada. That's true. Number three, Mechein Muchach, Beksubas, Ayin Beis, Amid Beis, Duhudas Yehudis. It's also true. The Mishnah tells us that if a woman violates Das Yudis, it's surrounded for forfeiture of the Ksuba. And there it's, what's Das Yudis? As she says the Mishnah in the Gemara, she goes Bizro Seha Megulos. However, this seems to be a proof in the opposite direction. Because Das Yudis, Rashi explains in Masechta Ksuba, Sayin, Bezim, and Alf in the Mishnah, that is the customs of the Jewish women. Now, customs are subject to change, not necessarily immutable. So from the place that the Mishnah Berurah quotes, from exactly the place that he quotes, and you get the opposite impression, at least if you ask me. So sure enough, we find a dispute on the bottom of the Rosh, the super commentaries. There were those who claim, as the Mishnah Berurah does, it's objective. It says a Teferet Shmuel on the bottom. Dover Shirogel Lios Mechusa B'isha means to the exclusion of the face and the neck, and the hands, that's okay. Avol nira be'ena, if the place shiragilos hanoshim legalos ro say it, some women go with their arms exposed. Here it's even worse. It's true in America. I don't know. I can't believe it happened in Europe. It's true in America. Everywhere you go today, it's terrible. I'll read it to you straightforwardly. Uregilin lios pasuach at samach ledodeha. It's open until very, very low cut, near her breasts. Zel minigra, V'korani b'hem chukim lo tovim v'tevach b'sharev. I don't care if they all go that way. Doesn't matter. This is Teferet Shmuel.
He's speaking of the Jewish people
there? I don't know. It's hard to imagine unless you walk in the streets today in certain Jewish neighborhoods, and you begin to think that maybe it's not so hard to imagine. But this is what it says. So he's in cahoots, if you will, with the Mishnah Berurah. Objective. However, another commentary called the Divrei Chamudos, these are all great rabbis, they're not just small people. Each one is greater than the next. Teferet Shmuel is one of the greatest rabbis, and the Divrei Chamudos is the famous Tosfos Yontif, Gedolei Olam. He seems to disagree. He writes as follows, like this. He says like this, V'im kein gamzro se'o. He says, an apachla yodeh, that's a problem. U'mistaber, he concludes, t'kol mokom u'mokom l'fim in hogo. Depends on contextually, on the custom. T'midi u'tam el d'dvarim sh'regila sh'lo l'chasoso. Lo mikri ervo, mishum d'lo osib huli day blank, v'chule. Means hirur. They don't want to really put the word hirur in hirur aveira. I'm thinking about bad thoughts. Came in the rogalbu, ukid the kaman gabe kol v'seyah. So if you're used to it, as he takes the case explicitly in the Rosh about seyah for single women, where it's not a problem, and kol, what's he referring to with respect to kol? See, in the very next os, he writes as follows: kol zemer is a problem. But kol dibura, speaking voice, she'eno zemer, she'medaberes b'kedaka muter. Why? Because kol aragulbo is used to it. Lo chashinon. So Divrei Chamudos is extraordinarily subjective. He says explicitly, going on the on this roll that came right before, that if everyone's going sleeveless, and he reads Shema opposite a woman who's sleeveless, it's not a problem. Used to it. Yeah.
People say it's subjective, like we said before, up to a point.
A very good question. Does the Divrei Chamudos say that in the nudist colony you can say Shema without a problem? What do you think? I'll ask you a second time. What do you think?
No, the Gemara says Shidarko Lechasoto. Shidarko, not Derech of the people. The Derech of
the Torah.
No, of the place to be covered.
Place of that part of the body.
Part of the body.
Right. So is there any objective standard?
Somebody who lives there all year round, then it would be fine for him.
In Nudist County?
If he lives there all year
round. Yeah, you think so?
No. I'm saying this is the only problem.
Anyway, let me give you my opinion on your question. I'll give you my opinion. The Rambam writes, Kol guf ha'isha erva. Now what does that mean? Her forehead is erva? What are you talking about? So let me explain what I think he means, Rabbi. He means the torso as opposed to the extremities. The guf, you have a guf. So that's the torso, the body itself. Then there are extremities. You have the arms, you have the leg, you have the head. But the guf starts from over here, we'll say from the collarbone, and goes, we'll say here, till the, till the legs separate. That's called gufayisha. In my view, that's objective error. And I don't care what everyone goes around going today in the low cut and the low back and they all those silly things, the crazy actress, midriff something, whatever, Mishagoyim, showing the navels. In my view, that's all prohibited. I don't care if they all go that way. It's objective error. Even though, when it comes to the extremities, I'm a Divrei Chamudos man. I think that really is, as a matter of fact, subjective. And I brought the raya from the Mishnah Berurah wrote to the contrary from Ksuba Sayan Beis seems to me to prove the other way. And I want to bring you one more raya. If you ever think of this question, I don't know one answered this question before. We said Tefach B'Yisherva, and then we said Shok B'Yisherva. What's the obvious question? It's the same thing. Seir is new, because it only applies to marriage. Kol is new, it's not a part of the body. Once we said that a tefer is prohibited, what do we have when you said shok? We're showing him three different answers. There are three answers to that question. I'll tell you all three. One is that shok is a code word, which means another woman, as opposed to your own wife. Your own wife, the shear is tefach, as we saw in the Gemara. And the other woman in the world, even less than the tefach. This is what the Rambam says. Dafka b'ishto, avol b'isha acheres, afilu pochot b'tefach avi'er. Where do you get it from? Shok. Answer number one. Answer number two is that shok is particularly seductive, and therefore, even less than a tefach is prohibited. Answer number three, the Rashba. Shok, you might have thought it's permissible. You know why you might have thought it's permissible? The Rashba explains why you might have thought it's permissible. This quote here in the Madani Yontif. Kamash Malon, the afal pi she'eno mokam tsanua be'ish. Even though the shok is not a place that is covered with respect to a man. What do you think, guys? They wore gym shorts? I'm asking you. Did they had they used to walk around in gym shorts? They had the that basketball? What did they used to walk around in? If you look carefully, you'll find. They used to walk around in the old days in covered to their knees. And the calf was uncovered. Just look at history books. That gives an impression that what a shok, not the thigh, but rather what? Help. The calf, beneath the knee. That's a simple pshat. I'll prove it to you from the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says you do chalitza, you take the chalitza shoe, and the woman puts it on her shok. And know where the chalitza shoe goes? And know where it goes? Where does it go? On the calf, not on the thigh. Yes.
What does that have to do? Why is the shoe such an important thing? Even if like dead people know how to wear the shoes?
It's a different question, but I can't answer it then. My time is too short. So I got a clear impression from this Rashba and from the Shulchan Aruch that shok means the calf. I think it's true. That's why in certain circles they say you're not permitted for a woman may must cover herself all the way till the ankle. I think it's true. I think that's what it says in the in the Gemara, that's what the word shok means. Of course, the problem is people don't do it, except in Shorim, Surah Chassidim. But even you're walking in B'nai Barak, Flatbush, you know, the nice, you know, from yeshiva neighborhoods, they wear nice dresses and skirts, they cover the knee, but then they're wearing stockings which are not necessarily opaque. They're wearing see-through. You can't wear see-through up here. So this is the question. What's my answer? I gave the answer already. It's subjective. It could change. In the time of the Talmud, they used to cover to the ankle. It changed. How did it change? Who was the first mechutzif to change it? I don't know. It changed. But the styles changed. Hemlines go up and down, as we all know, not only in Paris, but even in the Jewish community. Now I'm going to prove it to you that I'm right. We gave three answers to the question, who needs shok? What? Let's review them. One, it's a code word for another woman other than your wife. Two, it's particularly arousing. Three, it teaches you that even though a man leaves it exposed, which probably means the knee, beneath the knee. Why didn't the Gemara give a different answer, a much better answer? Namely, what would be a much better answer? That shok is objective. That would have been a much better answer, if you ask me. Better than all three of them. Why wasn't this answer given? What's the answer? Because it's not true. That's my proof. Okay, that's my opinion. It's against the Mishnah Berurah. I don't want to spend too much time on it. All this is an introduction to our subsequent discussion with respect to Kol and with respect to Seir. So, Shulchan Aruch writes, Yesh Dizoyer Mishmias Kol Zemer Isha B'Shas Kriyashma. So he follows the Rosh, that it is Kriyashma related. Bafilu Ishto, says the Rambam. Abel Kol Aravil Bo'enu Erva. What is, we saw that expression over here. It means a speaking voice, presumably. It's not considered to be an Erva. Fine. Says the Mishnah Berurah as follows. Zemer Isha. Afilu Penuya. Even a single woman. Abel Shalom B'Shas Kriyashma. Shari. But a single woman, not during Kriyashma, you may hear her voice. How do you like that? Don't leave the room. No one's allowed to leave the room yet. If you leave now, you're going to... Ach lo yechaven lehonus mizeh. Tesh lo yavu l'day hear. Should have intention to enjoy it in an erotic way. V'zeme eishes ish v'chein kol ha'arayas li'olam asim l'shmo. That's a din in Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezra. And here's the killer. V'chein pnuya she'inida michlal ha'arayas hi. Upsulos didan kulam becheskas nidus hein mishyagia lanzman veses. Once they turn 12, or 11 something, they're already assumed to have their period, and they have a status of nida, which is an erva. Hence, kol b'isha erva. You're not allowed to hear the voice of a woman singing. Explicit. Now, one second. Two things. Number one, there were those rabbis who disagreed and maintained, no, we'll follow the opinion in the Mordechai that kol b'isha erva is with respect to kriyashma. And they interpreted, a.k.a. misinterpreted it, to mean it was limited to kriyashma. Only to kriyashma. But beyond kriyashma, there's no violation of kol b'isha at all. That's not true. That's not true. We just saw it in Mishnah Berurah. That with respect to an isha penuya, that may be so. But with respect to an isha nida, isha sisht, or whatever it may be, the nochris. So, it is a prohibition. As we saw before, quoted earlier, that amongst the goyim, they had no choice but to learn when there was singing in the background. But other than that, it's not allowed. That's point number one. So it's a mistake, even though great rabbis have written it. Number one. Number two, why is Kol Isha Erva prohibited? Why? I'd like to know. They quote a nice pasuk, very nice. Kol Ech Erev Umar Nava. So what? I'll give you two choices, and you tell me which one you think is right. We'll have a vote. I've been gearing up to vote. These are the two choices. Choice number one, the voice itself can lead to arousal. And we know that any arousal can lead to otzah zera levatala. That's reason number one. Reason number two, the man may be enticed by this particular woman's voice and may attempt to have illicit relations with this woman. Okay? That's, the two choices are very stark and clear. Who votes for choice number one? Who votes for choice number... You know what's abstain. Who votes for choice number two? You vote for number one? No one votes for number two? You vote for number two?
Is it the better of two evils?
What?
I want to, if you have a third vote, there has to be a reason. We can't just say things arbitrarily. Kol b'isha erva is presumed as a din d'rabbanan. Has to have a reason. Why the rabbanan enacted? One more time.
One.
They enacted because they felt it would lead to arousal and would lead to hotzah zera levatala. A person can, by thinking sexual thoughts, it can lead into an ejaculation, which is prohibited by halacha if it's done in an inappropriate setting. That's reason number one. Reason number two, he's going to hear this woman singing with an enticing voice, and he's going to want to have relations with her as a result of that, and he may actually commit this terrible sin. I'm having to vote one more time.
Number 2B.
2B with B.
Sensual or like aggressive?
Either way. So you think, so you vote for 2. Now who votes for 2? Who votes for the possibility of number 2? No? No one wants any vote. Okay.
I voted one.
Who voted? Who starting it? Who votes number one? Shia Esamech. You're voting?
No.
Shia Esamech. Who votes number two? Uvarat S. So 3-2 votes with 3 abstentions. It is a tight one here. Let me prove to you that number one cannot possibly be right.
Oh.
Sorry, guys. I mean, it can be right, but not based on what I just read to you. I read to you, the Mishnah Berurah says, does not apply to a woman who is not a Nida. Who's not a Nida? Any woman under the age of 11 or 12. It can also be a woman who is, let's say, for argument's sake, postmenopausal, which can be as early as 40-something. The average age in America is 51. So she could be 40-something and a beautiful woman, and she was married, and she was, let's say, widowed or divorced, and she had gone to the mikveh at age 40-something and not seen anything after that. So she's a very attractive woman, but she's not an Arab, technically speaking. So Mishnah Berurah says, the law of Kol Yishud does not apply to her. How can you say that? How can you say that? If it's in the perspective of the voice itself arousing the man and causing Otoas Elevatola, what's the difference? So my understanding is, so there are those who disagree with the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah says it, when he says that an Isha Pnuya is permissible. Who's the quote? He quotes it from the Prima Gadim. That it's permissible. Sorry. One second. It's found in the... It's a machlokas between the Beis Shmuel and the Be'er Sheva. That's who fights about it. And he quotes a lenient view. So that's exactly the fight. The people who are strict will say the way they vote number one. The people who are lean, including Mishnah Berurah, have to vote number two. It's an expression in the Gemara in Masechet Megillah. Yael b'kola zinsa. She used a voice to seduce Sisra and maybe others, and we don't know exactly her whole career. It's very seductive. Mars Masechet Kiddushin, that even certain kinds of Shalom Aleichems aren't included in Kol Isha. How can that be? It's not a singing voice. If you know the in the movies or the old movies or whatever you want to call it, it goes like this: hello, the left fluttering of the eyelashes, that could be itself a come on, right? So therefore, if that's included in Kol Yishev, I'll take any question on Kol. We have a little bit of time to discuss Seir. The question has been clarified. Let's not discuss Seir Yishev. Here is a big fight, tremendous fight. Yes.
We didn't talk about not live, listening on the...
Oh, very good. In my opinion, if it's not live music, it's technically speaking permissive. Technically, of course, it's going to lead to arousal, it's prohibited.
And also, there's some people that say something about, if you don't see her singing while it's live, or... If
we saw that in the Mordechai. The Mordechai didn't see the women singing. They were learning Torah in the base of Medrash, and then the people washing the windows are singing, whatever it may be, putting kids to sleep. So it was. They considered to be prohibited unless there was no alternative.
And what if you have a device like a microphone or something?
It's a good question. The microphone's a good question. That's a good question. We generally assume that a microphone, even if in other areas of halacha we're going to not consider it to be the voice of the singer, in this area we are adopting a stricter view. I must tell you though, there were those who had a lenient view based on the microphone, and they permitted going to the opera. There's a man named Rabbi Ellenson, I wrote a book called Isha Mitzvos, part 2, on Snail Lech, as he quotes that, it's only a matter of, it may lead to a sin, the sin of relations. Come on. What do they have the expression now? It ain't over till the fat lady sings. That's the opera lady, right? I think so, right? The fat lady is singing in the opera. You're up there in the bleachers. If you want to be mezana with her, even though she's fat, she has bodyguards, and she only speaks Italian. What do you? It's so ridiculous. It's not going to happen. So they felt it's okay. And he writes in that same, I think, correctly, even though technically speaking that may be true. We're going to draw the line. Now, it's a fat lady in the opera, and he's all the way up on top, and she's Italian, and he's Jewish, and forget about it. Next thing you know, there'll be a Broadway show. Okay. It's English already. and she's not fat. And they know she's not so well dressed. And next thing you know, it's going to be the playhouse in the summer camp, which is Kohet. I'm speaking from experience. So, yeah, it's a very slippery slope. Okay, I hope I answered your question. Yes?
So I heard also, like, if men are singing together
at the same time. That's a question of not being able to hear her voice, because there are 100 women singing at the same time. The 100 women singing at the same time, you can't pick out any one of them, that's grounds to be limited.
So gospel choir is okay?
It's the only Yisrael about a Zohar. May not be an Yisrael of Yuli Arise. We go from one to the other. You only need Shri Chazdom, that's the only one's missing from the big three. But there are, you can be a little bit lenient, at least certainly after the fact, if there are many, many voices. Yes?
It's like women singing in shul.
Right, women singing in shul. So really in my shul, they don't sing so loud. But in some shuls, they belt it out there. Oh, belt out. Mahibit Soharo, they belt it out. But not always there then. Hashivein, they're back there by then. So that's when they belt out, the women are singing. They say, yeah, you don't have to make a big deal about it. So many voices. Okay. Having gone through this, we have a little time left to talk about Seir, which is even a bigger fight. The reality is, I'm giving you just a reality check, that in parts of Europe, 100 years ago, the women didn't cover their hair. Even married women. And if you're saying it's not true, you're being revisionist with covering pictures and all kinds of shtick that they're pulling down.
Doesn't mean that it was right.
I didn't say it was right. The Aruch
HaShulchan. You said if you're going to tell me this, then you're being a revisionist. If I tell you that,
no, you're saying the reality was.
I'm just giving you a reality in Lithuania, which is part of Europe. The Aruch HaShulchan, very famous author, writes that Bavonoseinu HaRabim, he doesn't say it's permissible. Due to our many sins, women don't cover their hair. The prohibition against saying Shema opposite a woman's hair no longer applies. Again, Shulchan Aruch writes in Siv Beis, Ayin Hei Beis, Seir shel isha shadaka lechasol, so also likwas kenegda, even his own wife, except for a single woman. Says the Mishnah Berurah, in contrast to his contemporary Aruch HaShulchan, a strong contrast, he writes as follows. A woman doesn't cover her hair as an Isur Torah. It's a Torah prohibition. Where does it come from? Midichsiv upara esro sheisha michlal shimachusa. It's a Gemara in Ksubas Ayin Beis. The Gam Kol Benos Yisrael Amach Zikos B'das Moshe. What calls it Das Moshe? Nizharos Mizeh Mimos Avoseinu Me'olom V'yarata B'chlal Ervehi. V'yosef Likos Kenegdon. And even if Isha Zu V'chaveroseh B'osu Mokom Nelech B'gili Yerosh B'shuk Kederach HaPrutzos, it's still Asur. The same as Gili Shoko, he said before. Objective Ervo. Fighting words, man. Against Yoruch HaShulchan. Who's right? And he compares it to Shok. Now, I already told you before, when it came to Shok, I was a more lenient. I thought Shok was subjective.
Didn't Mr. Burr also say it's subjective?
No.
By?
No. Mr. Burr said that Shok and Zeruah are objective. Only the part beneath the knee, which he didn't call shok, that was subjective, or the arm, the hand, you know, the forearm, he would consider to be subjective. Okay? So far with me, so good? Mishnah Berurah is clear as day. Everything is objective and shalom. Goodbye. I thought something was maybe considered radical, that maybe the shok might be subjective, because I think shok really means the calf, and they don't do it anymore. But Seir, I happen to think, is objective. I think he's correct. In terms of the Yisa Erev. Rav Moshe, in the Tshuva, is exactly the opposite of me. Rav Moshe says the Aruch HaShulchan is correct. So if the Mechitza and Shul is not so high, you can see over it. It's okay if they don't cover their hair. But if they don't cover their arms, forget about it. That's terrible. That's presumably objective. I held the exact opposite of my mission. That doesn't put me in such a great place. But why am I saying that? Why? What leads me to this position? Now, I already told you about Shok, what led me to it. I thought it means the calf. What about Seir? So what's the scoop with the Seir story? If Seir, in point of fact, is required for only for married women, not for single women, why? Let's go again. We'd like to ask the question, why? Why? Why do you think it's prohibited for married women? Why is it that... Let's take a step further. These are prohibitions. of Shema. Why does the Torah assume it is Midaraisa, as the simple Mishnah Berurah said, and it says in the Gemara, it's Das Moshe, it's Daraisa. Why did the Torah demand that a woman who's married cover her hair, and not a single woman? Who wants to give a guess? Suggestion. I won't hold it against you. Give me a suggestion. Yes?
I would go like as a getter.
What do you mean by that?
Like, almost like a yarmulke, a reminder
that what?
Look.
Reminder that what?
That they're married. That they're
excellent. Married. That's what I wanted to hear. It's a sign that she's married. Took me a while to figure this out. I'll tell you a story. You want to ask a question? I'll tell you a story first. I'll tell you a question. 40 years ago, about 30 and 40 years ago, there was a very wonderful family on the west side of Manhattan. And there were singles, even then, before the explosion, but even then. And then they were older, and they weren't getting married. So they wanted to make a mixer. Very noble, really. They make a mixer, you know, get invited 25, you know, we'll say singles of... Let's just make it easy. 25 men, 25 and over, and 25 women, 25 and over. Imagine it was 25. But they had to have some, what do you call them? Chaperones, facilitators. So they had, you know, maybe 25 of them. I don't know how many they had of them. Maybe 10 of them, I don't know exactly how many they had. Good. Interestingly, marrieds, I think this is sociologists say this, on average, have superior social skills. A, that's how they got married, and B, they developed when they got married. We're not going into sociology now. Guess what happened? Many of these men were more attracted to the married women. And I say, you got it wrong, and they're showing there, maybe they had a ring they didn't notice or something. My name is Mrs. I'm just a chaperone, I'm only a facilitator. So what did they do the next time I had a mixer? When you walked in, you checked in at the door, they gave you either one apple or two apples to put on your lapel. If you were unattached, you put one apple. If you were attached, you put two apples. This way, there'll be no misunderstandings of any sort. So a light bulb went off in my head. That's pshat. Why a woman has to cover her hair. It's two apples. They'll say, what about her ring? Number one, not all women, married women wear rings. You can marry a woman with an apple, ironically, right? And then you can eat the apple; it's gone. It's a Mishnah Kedushin. So, yeah.
So that works with covering your hair, like covering your hair, not with wearing a shade, though.
Exactly. So. That's why I'm opposed to shadels, which are so great that you can't tell them apart from natural hair. I'm not opposed to shadels. My wife has a shade, but you can tell it's a shade.
But even with the real good-looking shadels, you can still tell.
You're right. The good-looking ones, yes. But the great-looking ones, now.
You're paying attention. A lot of people have no idea.
Whatever it may be. I don't go into that now. I'm opposed to those shadels that you can't tell the difference. Because A, it's against the spirit of the law. And it may even be against the letter of the law. If a woman has no choice at work, she has no choice. She has to look super sleek, fancy in the law firm. I had that shadow once. And I gave a head of a shasat chak with a wedding ring, a big wedding ring, that, you know, at least the spirit of the law will be somehow achieved. Yes?
This idea that the reason is so people know. Is that written anywhere?
Yeah, my safe. I haven't opened it yet.
So what are some other reasons?
I'm not going with any other reasons. I only hold for my reason.
I understand that. I'm saying you've seen any. I've never heard a reason. But the third says, you know, you uncover her hair.
Right. So I want to be honest with you and tell you, I believe that the Rambam has a completely different view of this whole matter. Totally different view. The Rambam maintains that all women have to cover their hair, single and married. Okay. It's a simple read of the Rambam. Lo telach nebnos yisrael kruot ros pashuk. Achas pnuya v'achas eshesish. Simple read of the Rambam.
Nice?
Didn't say it. As a matter of fact, the Truma Sadeshet, one of the later Rishonim, says that according to the Rambam, the entire requirement for covering the hair is only rabbinic. Even though the Gemara says daraisa, that's Moshe. It's rabbinic. How did he know? Rambam didn't say so. You know how he knew? Because the Rambam equates singles and marriage. And it's inconceivable that a single woman should have to cover here by Torah law. So Rambam equates them, the whole enterprise is rabbinic in nature. And if you ask me, according to the Rambam, it's the same as the others. Same as the shulk, and same as the tefach, and it's just because it's gonna, you know, lead to bad thoughts, etc. Because in the Rambam's understood that bisman Torah seinu akadosha, that's how he understood the word daraisa. Bisman Torah, Paras Rosh Yeshiva indicates that women would all cover their hair. That's how it was then. But the same as shulk can change, we thought. So according to the Rambam, perhaps seir can change. Perhaps there's no need to cover it twice as the Gemara's and Ksubas. Perhaps in certain places there wouldn't be a need to cover it at all if that would be the custom in those places. That's only the Rambam. We don't follow the Rambam. At least the normative halacha does not follow the Rambam. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't, the Rambam doesn't, certainly the Ashkenazim don't. Yes?
Two things. One is that I heard that it's really for the woman, and that's why, like in your house, you're supposed to cover your hair even if there's no other men there.
That's incorrect. In my humble opinion, it's quoted by the Poskim, a woman who's in her privacy of her own home, even if she's with her husband, even if she's with her father, even if she's with her son, has no requirement to cover it. She may want to. There's no requirement. She wants to do it, she can do it. I don't think most women cover their hair when only their husbands are there. Maybe their fathers, their sons, even though they don't really have to, they may do it. But their husbands, I don't think most people do. If they want to do it, Tavo Alein Bracha. I think Mar says in Masechta Yuma, I think it is, that a woman would have 8 sons, Kohanim Gedolim, because she never, the walls of her home never saw the hairs of her head. All right, if you want, I'm not opposed to that, but it's not. I don't think it's really. You have to be careful what to require and what to just say is praiseworthy. Yes.
Should she maybe cover it in her home for those during the Vida period?
I don't think she has to. But Moshe, she doesn't have to.
No.
Because she doesn't do it.
There are many that she has to.
Many.
Back to the shekels that look real nice.
No. Nice is good. No, she'll like her hair.
You would feel very good, and people could be fooled by it. It still offers some protection, distinction, because she is wearing a wig.
Right.
So even if like it was to lead to something, she still got to like have a wig on her head. It's still like a pretty big...
Right. Right. I get it. Good.
Also, I've heard that after, let's say, if someone gets divorced or widowed...
Good question. You're asking an obvious question. According to me, why does it say in the postgim that if a woman is divorced or widowed, she's required to cover her hair? That's question number one. Question number two, why must she cover all of her hair? Which is generally assumed, except maybe for a little bit, tefach at most. Just cover most of the hair. That should do the trick. And number three... Why is the Torah prohibition only b'shuk? As we just read, in the marketplace. The answer to all three is the same. By Torah law, it's only in the market, where people don't know who she is. It's only while she is married, because of what I said. And it's only the majority of the head. All the other prohibitions, extensions are rabbinic. What's rabbinic? One, it applies even in her own house, when strangers are there. But they know her name is Mrs. Schwartz, because it says Schwartz they know who she is, she came into her house. Number two, it applies even to the entirety of the hair, minus the tefach, by rabbinic law. And number three, by rabbinic law, even though she's already divorced a widow, since for 20 years it was covered, it wouldn't be unbecoming for her to uncover it. Those are all rabbinic in nature, all three. Okay. Having said all this, what emerges is that a woman, it's enough if she, by Torah law, if she covers the entirety of her head, the majority of her head, even if it's see-through. Because it's only an indication that she's married. This explains to me the custom of many, of the Gemara really, the Mishnah in Ksubas in the beginning of the second parak. How do you know that a woman who is married is a Basula, she gets a greater Ksuba? Because she yotza bihinuma of erosha perua, she wore a veil, but her hair was flying out. What happened? She's married already. The answer is that she was going with a veil, and the custom was that she covered at the wedding night. She wears a veil. You know, it's put over her face for a brief period, and it's put back up. She's on her head. You can see through it. Doesn't cover all of her hair. May not even cover most of her hair. It should cover most of her hair, or at least most of her head. It's a difference. That's sufficient by Torah law. And the rabbinic law only comes later on. That's one interpretation of this long-standing practice. According to this understanding, I'm extremely upset in recent years, only a recent thing, that women who are married, and they're going to cover their hair their whole life, but at their wedding they take it off. And I said, well, it's a difference, it's see-through anyway. No, it makes a big difference. By Torah law, it's enough to have a see-through, which covers most of the head. Now, I could justify the custom of the that goes on at the wedding. I could. I'm not doing it. I could. And the justification goes as follows. The Torah source, assuming it's a Torah requirement, for a woman to cover her hair is Soto, Uparas Rosh Isha. A woman cannot become a Soto, it's impossible, until she was intimate with her husband. Kodma Shrivas Baal, Shrivas Baal is a more principle. So we can argue that the Torah's requirement of covering there only is after the marriage is consummated. And therefore, at the wedding itself, she's not required to cover her hair at all. That would be a justification of this practice. However, since it was never practiced for hundreds of years, I'm very loath to adopt it. Now, because maybe my first interpretation is correct. So therefore, I'm very much opposed to that unfortunate custom which exists recently. Got a hand up?
No, I was going to say that. It should not be a
hand. That's that. Okay, good. So this is the issue. So if I'm right, hair is the opposite of all the other eruvs. All the other eruvs, they are naturally arousing, and for this reason, the halacha demands that we cover them. Here it's the other way around. The halacha demands that the hair be covered to show that she's married. And once the halacha demands that it be covered, then the forbidden fruit becomes arousing. But a single woman, with halacha never demanded it, again, according to everybody except for the Rambam, it's not a problem. You got it? If I'm right, the Aruch HaShulchan is wrong. If I'm right, then what did he say? Rabbi Hussein or Rabin, nowadays, the women are not covering their hair, so you're used to it, so it's not going to cause hero. That may be true in point of fact, at least it was then. Things have gotten better now, because the Bechlal things have gotten better. I grew up, about 100 years ago when I wasn't around, I can tell you from 50 years ago, I can remember even, when I moved to Queens, a shul of many hundreds of members in the shul, an Orthodox shul, Shomer Shabbos, two women covered there. The Rebbetzin and one other one. I'm telling you. I know. I moved there in 1958. I know exactly what year I'm talking about. Two. Today, in that same shul, many more. The world's changed in the 50s. It's changed. Hey. But again, as I said before, if I'm correct, even if you went back to the 50 years ago situation where the women did not cover the hair, it wouldn't matter. Because it's not based upon hair, it's based upon an objective standard. So I'm not enamored of the Aruch HaShulchan. If you're stuck, so close your eyes. The Mishnah Berurah doesn't like closing your eyes in this context, but for this, we could perhaps be somewhat lenient. Yes?
Okay, it's like, is it the head itself? Like, if a woman had totally shaved bald head.
I once had Nebuch visit a cancer patient in a hospice. She was just before her patira. She was always careful about covering her hair. She came with, I walked in, she's covering, doing nothing on her head. Nebuch, no hair at all, the chemo. I told her daughter, ask the woman, ask your mother to put on a tich.
So it's the head itself also.
That's the raisin. The hair is the rabbonah. I really had that case. It was a very sad case. But that's what I think. Any final questions, Rabbi Osai? I want to thank you for your kind attention for this mini-series. I hope that you will continue to pursue halacha, both in its study and its practice, for the rest of your lives.
Thank you.
Thank you.